All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Halloween, everybody. Happy Friday. Today is October 31st, 2025. And our top story this morning is Amazon's earnings. They were amazing. Massive beat. Incredible results from Amazon. Were they? It's interesting. You might have guessed I'm a little skeptical of the earnings that big tech has been prone to report. But let's look at the numbers. Earnings per share of $1.95. That's versus expectations of $1.57. They beat by a huge margin. Oh my God, the AI business must be immensely profitable, right? Revenue beats $180.2 billion versus just $177.9 billion expected. Wow, they're taking in all kinds of money. Surely it's real money and not data center credits, right? Right? What else do we have here? Cloud revenue, $33 billion versus $32.5 billion. That's actually not such a beat, but it is tremendous year-over-year growth. The revenue guidance was increased. The shares are up 13%. Great success over at Amazon. But I'm going to show you a couple of things. I just love FinTwit, by the way. You guys on out there on FinTwit, we're going to quote a lot of you guys today, and we're going to do something crazy, Wall Street Journal. We're actually going to provide attribution to our sources, Wall Street Journal, who ran an exclusive yesterday, a story that my channel had 6 days ago about Bronk and Brombot. But yeah, we're actually gonna quote these guys, and we're going to show you who they are and where you can find them if you want to learn more, because they deserve credit for their work. What a concept. Guys, Amazon, I hate to say it, they made it all up. They manufactured revenue, they manufactured earnings, and they got a big beat. And there is one specific, two statistics really, that prove how this is all just smoke and mirrors. We also got earnings from Apple. You know what? Apple earnings were pretty good. Now, the initial results came in and Apple stock was initially down 5%. Now it's actually up 2%. The headline was it was an iPhone miss. But actually, I think this was just Apple being prudent. The more we learned, the more the conference call we went on, Apple started to talk about how they were supply constrained and how they were having trouble selling iPhones in China. Okay, we got this trade war going on. That makes sense. The trade war escalated during the last quarter. But really, I think the takeaway from Apple's earnings is that the iPhone 17 is selling better, maybe much better than the iPhone 16, which was largely a dud despite the ridiculous iPhone upgrade super cycle narrative that the mainstream press was pumping last year after the 16's release. The 17 seems to be selling better, but Apple was prudent. They didn't build too much of them because they didn't want to get stuck with stranded inventory. Now it's selling a little bit better and they're supply constrained. It's a self-imposed supply constraint. I think it was smart. And Apple's probably looking pretty good. So they're back over $4 trillion here in market cap, joining Microsoft and NVIDIA, of course, who's all the way past $5 trillion. Gag me with that. Exxon and Chevron both reported their earnings. They both beat. Stocks not making a very big move here. Oil's an interesting one, guys. Production is up. Prices are down. The world seems to be headed for a pretty substantial supply glut. Although there's some geopolitical developments that we're going to talk about at the end of the show may actually cause a ruckus in the supply of oil. We've got more Nexperia news this morning. We've got, F.G. Friedrich Scheisen, some kind of German name, which I'm sure I'm going to struggle to pronounce when we get to the story. But a major automotive supplier for names like Volkswagen, and I believe Mercedes-Benz was the other one. They're shutting down production because of Nexperia chips. So, you know, look, the trade war and the Dutch seized Nexperia largely at the behest of the United States. And now there's problems with Western automakers and Japanese automakers, which I'll lump them in with the West just because there's China and then there's other. Look, you know, this we gave ourselves a black eye here. There's no other way to look at it. The trade war is hurting our companies. But, of course, the other side is getting a black eye, too. We got China's manufacturing PMI came out. The manufacturing slump in China has deepened yet again. Now, some of that is self-imposed because the Chinese are trying to rein in overcapacity. I made a video about that a few weeks ago. But the reason why the Chinese are trying to rein in their own industrial overcapacity is because we are not buying as much because of the tariffs. I don't know that this deal that was cut in South Korea this week is going to change that trajectory. Maybe it slows the decline a little bit. But the manufacturing slump got worse for China. So both sides have a black eye in this trade war this morning. Also, China's housing slump continues to get worse. 41.9% year-over-year decline in home sales for China. Guys, that's really bad. But keep in mind, that's almost a 42% decline from 2024 numbers, which were themselves a significant decline from 23, from 22, from 21. When it comes to real estate, it's been 2008 in China for four freaking years, and it's still getting worse. Where's my China bottom callers? You guys out there today, you've been calling a bottom in the Chinese housing market for a couple of years now. I ain't seeing it, not with a 42% decline. What else we got this morning? Liquidity problems. Guys, we've got to watch this liquidity problem. Something is happening in the banking system. It is not a three-alarm fire yet. It's more just like a smoke alarm in the kitchen, all right? Maybe somebody just burned toast, or maybe there's a fire inside the walls and we don't know it and the whole house is about to go up. I honestly couldn't tell you, but the timing of this cannot be ignored, along with some of the things Jerome Powell said during his press conference at the FOMC. We've got the SOFR-IORB spread. First of all, you're like, the what? I'll tell you what that is. Don't worry, and why you should be worried about it. That is growing. The discount window usage is growing. They call it the discount window. Oh, great, money's on sale. No, that's where desperate banks go to get money before they die. All right, that is getting used all of a sudden, not at a huge level, but a rising level. And repurchase agreements. Just as reverse repos go away, the repos are coming back. Banks need money, and they're borrowing it. It's getting more expensive to borrow, and they're going to increasingly desperate measures to get that money. Not yet a three-alarm fire. Again, I want to temper the enthusiasm here, but all of these charts moving upward in the same direction at the same time is indicative of a problem brewing. And like we saw in 2023, sometimes these problems start with a slight increase and then they go vertical. Keep your eye on that one. We got Joe Brown coming on the channel next week to actually talk about liquidity. He is always excellent. Michael Burry is back, and he's saying pretty much the same exact thing that I've been saying. That's fun. Private credit is back in the news again in Bloomberg this morning. Their usage of PIK or payment in kind to hide the fact that their zombie companies don't cash flow and they can't pay their debt is getting worse and worse. We're going to cover that one. And guys, sadly, we have another 2020s bingo update at the end of the show. Look, I do the doom thing here. We're just going to do it. We're going to go full doomer here. It seems like war could be imminent. I wish I was kidding. It ain't. Shout out to Doomberg, who was way out in front of that one in our interview a few weeks ago or a few days ago. It hasn't even been that long. It feels like a few weeks. It has been a week, guys. We got a lot to talk about today. How about we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance, shall we? And trick or treat, all that good stuff. Hit the thumbnail or hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, all that stuff for the algorithm. It's good for the channel. It makes you feel great, too. And you know, then you can come back tomorrow. Have your coffee with the Melonheads, because we do this one every single day. The S&P 500 is up 50 points at the moment. I can tell you guys, right around the time this story broke that we're going to talk about at the end of the show, we saw the market start to head lower, and it's still heading lower. A lot of these gains from Amazon's earnings appear to be going up in smoke right now. Still up for the day, up a decent clip, almost 0.75%, but keep an eye on that. The Dow is also positive, but just barely here, up 45 points or 0.1% and heading lower. Market is reversing course here. The NASDAQ, however, way up. Again, the Amazon earnings, the Apple earnings to a lesser extent, but pretty much Amazon having an outsized impact on the NASDAQ this morning. 329 points higher for the NASDAQ. The AI bubble bloweth. 1.29% higher, but declining. Again, all around 825, 830 when that story broke about the imminency of war, we're seeing stocks start to head lower here. Meanwhile, the dollar stronger again this morning, 99.68.14 or 14 basis points higher. Euro's getting weaker. The yen's getting weaker. That's pushing the dollar higher. Looking over at the bond market, we've got quite a mixed bag in the bond market here. Nothing really moving too much, though. The 30-year yield, 4.660. That's up by a point and change. The 10-year's at 4.101. That's up about a half a point. The 2-year is down just a tenth of a point here, 3.613. And the 1 month at 3.977. That's actually higher by 3 basis points. That's curious. So the 1 month making the only big move here, although that quote is a little bit delayed. Looking over at the metals market, we've got some more interesting developments in metals this morning. Spot gold in London, $4,032. That's higher by $8. New York gold, higher by $29, $4,044 for that front month contract, or about 0.7%. So gold, a little bit higher this morning. Silver continues to be interesting. Look at that spread. First of all, spot silver, $49.08, up 16 cents or a third of a percent. All right, we're green in silver. I like the shiny. Meanwhile, that December contract, $48.63, that's only up 1 cent or 0.01%. Look at the gap. It's getting bigger. We are over 40 cents now in backwardation. And I mentioned this yesterday. We were about 20 cents in backwardation yesterday. The price in London is starting to rise faster than the price in New York again. That is what led to that blowout in silver that we saw over the last few weeks. And then, of course, we had that violent correction as metal left New York and apparently metal left Shanghai, all bound for London to alleviate that shortage. It looks like that has run its course now, but the scramble for metal in London appears to be restarting. It's not a fever pitch yet, but we are seeing the difference in price here, that backwardation. Metal in London, more valuable than New York. That's what led to that vertical move in price last time. I like the shiny. Copper down 0.5% this morning. Platinum is down 1% this morning. Palladium making up for it, up 1%. Crude oil is up about 0.75% here, $61.05 for December WTI futures. Looking over at Bitcoin, Bitcoin had a rough day yesterday. We went as low as 106,000 yesterday. Now clawing that back to 109.9, almost 110,000, a little bit higher than we were this time yesterday morning. But Bitcoin has had a pretty significant four-day sell-off here, so we'll just have to wait and see what happens this weekend. All right, let's talk about the big one, guys. This is the big one here. Amazon stock jumps 13% after earnings. Why it's surging to a record high. These earnings were incredible. Massive beat from Amazon. Look at some of these numbers. Good God. Amazon reported better than expected earnings results, sending its shares heading for a new record high. For the September quarter, the company reported adjusted earnings per share of $1.95 compared to Wall Street's estimates of a paltry $1.57. I may have embellished a little bit there, but the numbers are accurate. The earnings included investment gains from AI startup Anthropic. Put a big fat pin in that one. We'll be back. Revenue came in at $180.2 billion, which was ahead of analysts' expectations of $177.9 billion. So big revenue beat too. Not as big as that earnings beat, though. Revenue for Amazon's closely watched cloud unit, AWS, was $33 billion versus $32.5 billion analysts' estimate. A big number, good year-over-year growth, but not much better than expected. Maybe it's getting a little bit harder to round-trip revenue. I don't know. Amazon said revenue for the current quarter would be between $206 billion to $213 billion versus $208.4 estimates. So it was a guide high. On the conference call with analysts, CEO Andy Jassy said the company has doubled AWS capacity measured by power from 2022 and is on track to double capacity again by 2027. The company now expects capital expenditures to come in at $125 billion for the full year, ahead of the current Wall Street forecast of $117.5 billion. They're increasing their CapEx. It expects CapEx to increase again next year. These two paragraphs, I can't help but wonder, guys, when we talk about AI, why are we always talking about it? First of all, we measure it in gigawatts, how much power it consumes. And then we talk about all of the CapEx, how much money we're spending. How come every time we need to measure the AI bubble, we're always using phrases that describe how much resources are being wasted on it? How come we never talk about how much money it's making? How come we never talk about how profitable it is, about all the breakthroughs it's making? Maybe that's because there ain't any. Oh, so instead we talk about how much power we're wasting and how much money is going up in smoke. And you can see it. You can see it in their numbers. This is why I am highly doubtful of Amazon's earnings. And we got to send it. I got to send a shout out to a couple of people. First of all, Dr. Gingerballs on X, Great name. Okay. There, thanks for the visual, Doc. Appreciate it. By the way, Dr. G here, we'll call him. He is a fellow engineer. I've been following him for a few years. I've come to respect his opinion, especially on the AI bubble. He says, nobody reads the earnings report. Amazon, from their earnings report, third quarter 2025 net income includes pre-tax gains of $9.5 billion included in non-operating income. That's from our investments in Anthropic. Guys, understand that massive beat, that $1.95 per share versus $1.57 per share. Why? Because some greater fool somewhere paid a higher price for a chunk of Anthropic, and then Amazon goes and says, well, our equity stake in Anthropic is therefore worth more money, and we just earned an extra $9.5 billion because of it. Amazon didn't take in any money. They just wrote up the value of Anthropic, a company that burns cash like the world has never seen before outside of OpenAI, who also burns cash, and poof, earnings beat. Shout out to Dr. G, who spotted that one. I highly recommend you follow him on X. But wait, there's more. We got to talk about Mr. Ross Hendricks, another guy that I've been following for a while now. Ross, excellent job. He says, how long until the algos and Momo monkeys realize Amazon operating income was flat year over year? So let's look at this picture here. If you take away the non-operating income, the big gain from their Anthropic stake, what money did Amazon actually make? What does their earnings look like without that $9.5 billion gain from Anthropic? And Ross Hendricks zeroes in on operating income. In 2025, it was $17.422 billion. A year ago, it was $17.411 billion. Amazon's operating income went up by $11 million. What did they spend? $170 billion? Is that what the CapEx was? I forget what the number was. $170 billion or some ridiculous number like that in CapEx, and their operating income went up by $11 million. So at this rate, in about 1,000 years, we might break even on that CapEx. Great success. Oh, that's right. The GPUs we're buying, they're only going to last about 4 years. Crap. They're not making any money, guys. You can round trip your revenue to make your revenue numbers look good by giving money to your customers so your customers can give the money right back to you. You can manufacture earnings, but you can't fake free cash flow. And by the way, this is another one here. This one from Jack Farley, who Jack runs a very big YouTube channel as well. Thank you to my fellow Jack, who said very strong quarter from Amazon, no doubt. But at the same time, Amazon's free cash flow is collapsing. AI CapEx is consuming so much capital. Guys, free cash flow, that's the money in the bank at the end of the quarter. All right, you can round trip your revenue to make your revenue numbers look bigger by redeeming data center credits and reporting it as revenue. You can arbitrarily write up your investment Anthropic to make your earnings per share look better, but you cannot fake money in the bank. This is Amazon's money in the bank, and it's going down every single quarter. This is the greatest incineration of capital the world has ever seen, and everybody is cheering it. That's how money dies, to the sound of thunderous applause. So shout out to Dr. Gingerballs, Ross Hendricks, and Jack Farley, who immediately saw right through these ridiculous Amazon earnings. But you know what? The AI bros, they don't care. Buy the stock. Look at it. Up 13.3%. Guys, think about that. That's like $300 billion of market cap just poof, magically appears. Why did that $300 billion of market cap magically appear? Because Amazon made $9.5 billion of Anthropic market cap magically appear, even though their money went down. So how much fake value has been created here? $9.5 billion of Anthropic turns into $300 billion of Amazon cash share value. Guys, this is the bubble. This is how these bubbles get ridiculous. And I feel like I'm watching Selena Gomez bet on a blackjack round right now in The Big Short. What happens when investors stop throwing more and more money into the fire while Jensen and Sam Altman tell stories by the fire about how much money they're going to make in the future? Trust me. What happens if investors stop shoveling that cash into the furnace? It all goes down. Meanwhile, Apple, also had a pretty good quarter. Apple, I'm going to be a lot more optimistic about. Apple shares rise as iPhone holiday sales forecast soothes supply woes. Apple shares rose about 2% pre-market on Friday after upbeat forecasts for the lucrative holiday quarter suggested the latest iPhone 17 models were driving a sales rebound despite delays in shipping to key market China. While the supply constraints weighed on sales in the fourth quarter, investors remained optimistic as the September launch of the new iPhone lineup helped Apple shares cross above the $4 trillion market cap range earlier this week, joining NVIDIA and Microsoft, who are round-tripping revenue and creating fake growth. Yep. The outlook has also helped allay concerns around Apple going slow on the integration of some long-awaited artificial intelligence features, even as other tech majors race ahead. I'll be honest with you, I think that is a feature of Apple stock, not a bug. I don't think Apple stock will be spared when this bubble bursts, but at the very least, Apple has not incinerated their investors' capital on this silly experiment in throwing all the compute we can buy and all the data we can steal at this white paper a couple of Google engineers wrote in 2017 to see if we can achieve artificial intelligence. We can't. I just know that owning this stock for many decades, when you're really big like Apple, you don't have to move fast. Sometimes you just have to get it right eventually, said Eric Clark, CIO of AccuVest. Again, I think it's good that Apple has stayed out of the AI bubble. I think in the long run, they'll be looked at as wise to do so. Apple stock up a little less than 2% here, $276.50, up by $5.25 this morning. We also got oil major earnings here. Pretty good. Exxon and Chevron surpassed estimates with oil production increases. ExxonMobil and Chevron outperformed Wall Street expectations after new oil field projects and acquisitions boosted crude output. Exxon's adjusted third quarter profit per share was 7 cents higher than forecast, while Chevron posted an almost 20 cent surprise on Friday. For Exxon, it was the sixth consecutive beat, buoyed by the startup of the Explorer's latest Guyana development. Gee, the Guyana development. I wonder if that might be related to our 2020s bingo update at the end of the show. Chevron rose as much as 1.4% in pre-market trading in New York. Exxon, meanwhile, dipped more than 3% before retracing some of those losses after a spate of acquisitions during the period pressured free cash flow. North America's largest oil companies are pursuing divergent paths as global oil markets slip into what is widely expected to be a hefty supply glut. As Exxon presses ahead with a raft of expansion projects despite slumping crude prices, Chevron is positioning itself to wring cash from operations to weather the market downturn. So we've got two different approaches from these two competitors here. ExxonMobil right now down about a half a percent, $114.11. Not much of a move on earnings for Exxon. And Chevron is up just under 1%, $155.54. Not much move in either stock this morning. Meanwhile, we've got trouble with the trade war. More Nexperia stories. Volkswagen and BMW supplier slows output on Nexperia chip shortage. All right, it's time for Jack to work on his German accent, his German pronunciation. A key supplier to automakers, including Volkswagen and BMW, is reducing production in Germany due to a semiconductor shortage sparked by a conflict with China over supplier Nexperia, according to people familiar with the matter. ZF Friedrichshafen has cut shifts at its main electric-driven plant in Schweinfurt. How's my pronunciation, guys? Because the availability of important components has tightened, the people said, asking not to be identified because the information isn't public. ZF Friedrichshafen supplies most major automakers, including Mercedes-Benz, Stellantis, and Ford. Beijing this month blocked Nexperia from exporting its facilities to the country, responding to the Dutch government seizing control of the Chinese-owned chipmaker. The moves highlight worsening trade relations between China and the West, disrupting complex supply chains that have been built over years. Volkswagen on Thursday warned that meeting its financial targets will depend on sourcing enough semiconductors. ZF Schweinfurt's facility, which employs sorry, I'm trying here, guys. ZF Friedrichshafen's Schweinfurt facility, which employs roughly 8,000 workers, is one of the company's most important globally. It's the supplier's lead plant making electric motors and also produces chassis and driveline systems used in combustion engine as well as electric vehicles, making it central to ZF's electrification push. Elsewhere in Germany, Robert Bosch is preparing to cut working hours at its Salzgitter site. The factory makes electronic control units and requires a continual flow of parts to stay operational. Now, that last part's important because they're talking about Bosch preparing to cut hours. I had a story about 2 weeks ago that Bosch was planning mass layoffs, and that was before this Nexperia story broke. So I don't know how much of this story is slowdowns in production because the auto market sucks, or how much of it is a slowdown in production because of the supply shortage, because of the trade war. It's probably both, but I don't know which is the greater cause here. When I see them trying to attach Bosch to this story, I kind of start to think maybe they're using this as a bit of a crutch. Don't quote me on that, but I couldn't help but notice Bosch there. All right. We got a black eye because of what's going on with Friedrichshafen and the Nexperia chips, but China's got their own black eyes this morning. China manufacturing slump deepens to a six-month low in October as PMI misses estimates. Nobody is spared in this trade war. China's manufacturing activity in October contracted more than expected, shrinking to the lowest level in 6 months, an official survey showed on Friday, as trade tensions with Washington reignited during the month. The official Manufacturing Purchase Managers Index came in at 49.0, data from the National Bureau of Statistics showed. Chinese government statistics, take that with a grain of salt, guys. That missed expectations for 49.6. A reading above 50 indicates growth, while a reading below 50 indicates contraction. So the Chinese government is admitting that manufacturing production is slowing. That's a significant development there. The latest reading reversed the recovery in recent months after the PMI rose to a six-month high of 49.8, which is still in contraction compared to 49.4 in August and 49.3 in July. The sub-index is tracking production, new orders, raw material inventory, and employment all sank further into contraction, official data showed, pointing to a deeper manufacturing slowdown and softer demand. The non-manufacturing PMI covering construction and services ticked up to 50.1, just barely expanding, boosted by renewed momentum in its air and railway transportation, accommodation, cultural and sports-related entertainment activities. October saw an eight-week Golden Day holiday from October 1st to the 8th. All right, so this is interesting. This construction services PMI ticking up to 51, and it's because of air and railway construction as well as cultural and sports-related entertainment activities. They're building trains and airports and stadiums to try to make up for the decline in housing construction to stimulate the economy. And that's largely local government debt being used to fuel those construction activities. And that's something the Chinese federal government has tried to tamp down on, or at least the national government, I should say, federal, maybe not the right word. So we're seeing growth in these local government projects, even though the national government doesn't want that. And why are they doing these national growth numbers? It's because of the housing market. And China's got a second black eye this morning. China home sales slump deepens after easing in top cities. China's new home sales extended a slump in October, despite recent easing measures introduced by major cities to revive the struggling property market. The value of new home sales from the 100 largest property companies stood at 253 billion yuan. It's about $35.6 billion. Preliminary data from China's Real Estate Information Corp on Friday showed, again, government statistics, grain of salt, but that represents a 41.9% drop from a year earlier. Holy crap. That's a big freaking drop. That's according to the data compiled by Bloomberg. It also snaps a brief stabilization in sales seen a month earlier. China's housing slump has dragged on for more than 4 years, with sales falling further since the second quarter. Mild easing of buying restrictions in some of the biggest cities failed to revive sentiment immediately as the country's labor market is souring, hurting demand for home shopping. Guys, when it comes to real estate, I said it at the beginning of the show, it's been 2008 for 4 years in China, and it's getting worse, a 42% decline. All right, but we have our own problems. We got to talk about this, guys. The liquidity problems are popping up. And by the way, another awesome one from FinTwit here. Who did this? Oh, son of a gun, I lost it. Where did it go? This was my man, John Galt. Shoot, where did it go? Can I back it up? No, I can't. Oh, John Galt, where are you? I'm going to find this post. Oh, Jack screwed the pooch this morning. Where is it? John, where's your SOFR spread? Oh, man, I blew it. All right, well, I'm just going to have to do it anecdotally because I don't want to search through my DMs. Oh, yeah, and there's Sydney Sweeney, so we can't talk about that. All right, the SOFR-IORB spread, that was very briefly on the screen before I screwed it up. SOFR is secured overnight funding rate. That is the cost of lending between banks overnight. IORB is interest on overnight reserve balances. That's what the Fed pays. That's basically the Fed funds rate. It's not the same thing, but it's pretty close. All right. IORB is what the Fed sets. SOFR is what the banks lend to each other at. And what we're seeing is the difference between the two is growing. For example, yesterday, the Fed cut by 25 basis points, but SOFR only went down by 23, which means that spread grew by 2 basis points. That means it's getting more and more expensive for the banks to borrow from each other, even as the Fed tries to take that number down. All right, I'm sorry I closed that chart and I didn't have it ready, but I believe that was my man John Galt from MacroEdge who posted that one. John, thank you. Awesome chart. Should give you more credit for that, but I didn't. All right. Also, while that's going on, while we're seeing the overnight borrowing costs going up relative to the Fed's rates, we're also starting to see a liquidity crunch. This is the St. Louis Fed chart for the Fed's discount window. This is the last place on earth a bank can go to borrow money before they die. And it's rising. It's rising, I don't want to say fast, but it's significantly. And it hit $7.8 billion yesterday. Somebody out there, some bank, some hedge fund, some financial institution, somebody is hurting. We don't know who. They don't tell us who it is. But somebody out there went for $7.8 billion in a hurry. And they got it. The Fed provided it. Now you're seeing this has started to rise. It actually started, realistically, it started to rise May, June. I think this is probably the proximity to April and Liberation Day can't be ignored here, but stress has been building up in the banking system. Now let's temper this enthusiasm. Let's zoom out to a 5-year chart, okay? Here's that rise over here. You can't even see it because you know the use of the Fed's discount window went vertical in 2023 when Silicon Valley Bank failed. All right, so you know, but you'll notice it was ticking up slowly in the months before that. It ticked up, it ticked up, it ticked up. It stayed low for a while and then slam, up it goes. All right, well, now we're ticking up again. So it's worth keeping an eye on. We haven't reached the slam level, but at this point, I think we're on like the Friday news dump watch for a sudden bank failure, especially the regionals and the community banks who are hurting from this string of bankruptcies. And there's more also to this, not just the use of the discount window, the repurchase agreements or the repos. That one hit a new spike, a post-Silicon Valley Bank, or no, actually, this is a post-COVID high of over $20 billion in repurchase agreements, short-term borrowings from the Federal Reserve using U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities as collateral. The previous spike was $11 billion back in June at the end of the month, the end of the quarter. You typically see those spikes at the end of the quarter. We're not at the end of the quarter here, though, guys. This is October 30th. October 31st is the end of the month, but not the quarter. And we just went to $20 billion. So again, people need money. Banks, financial institutions, they need the money. Now, this chart was posted by Mr. Robert, a.k.a. Infra, at infra_a_. Thank you, Robert, for posting this one. That was a good chart. And Robert updated this chart before the St. Louis Fed chart updated. So that was good. And once more, a shout out to my friends at MacroEdge. While all of these liquidity problems are developing, the labor market continues to decline, even though the government isn't telling us because they're shut down and the people who measure this stuff are temporarily not working. But MacroEdge does not take the day off. Job cuts surge near record, even as yields rise. Our October employment report will be released Friday. And take a look at this. These are showing monthlies for the job cuts announced. This is basically the summary of all the anecdotes of layoffs. And we got a big spike in October, the highest we've seen since that spike at the beginning of this year. And then this lower chart here zooms out a little bit. And you can see we are now higher than we've been other than that spike at the beginning of the year for quite a while. Layoffs are accelerating even as hiring is decelerating, which means unemployment is rising. The labor market is getting worse even as consumers are tapped. Shout out to MacroEdge. Excellent work over there, guys. And Michael Burry is back. Cassandra Unchained, this is Dr. Michael Burry of Big Short fame on Twitter yesterday saying, well, pretty much what I've been saying for 2 years. Sometimes we see bubbles. Sometimes there is something to do about it. Sometimes the only winning move is not to play. All right, so I'm going to give you my interpretation of this. Maybe others have other interpretations of what Dr. Burry is talking about here. He tends to be cryptic sometimes, and sometimes he just posts sell, right? He's not He's not right all the time. He's gotten a few wrong, but he had one really big W, you may recall. They made a movie about it. What he's saying is, in my interpretation of this, there is an AI bubble. Don't short it, but don't long it either. Sometimes the best move, the only move, is not to play. And guys, that's what I've been doing for the last 2 years. I've been parked in gold, silver, and Bitcoin, and I've reduced my Bitcoin position over the last few weeks, but I'm not playing. I don't think we have real price discovery. I think it's all fake. So I'm not going to invest my money in this garbage that spits out nonsense. But at the same time, I'm not going to stand in front of a freight train and bet my life it's going to stop. And based on what I'm seeing here from Dr. Burry, I think he's got the same mentality. Shout out to Dr. Burry. Also, I want to send a shout out to Lox Gunapathy from Unicus Research, who came on the channel yesterday to talk about another isolated event. Lox has been way out in front of this, doing fantastic work, burning the candle at both ends over at Unicus Research. Really smart crew over there. And she just really does good work. So I want to plug this video. But I got a very interesting comment on this video. We talked a lot about the first help possible downgrade, and we talked a lot about Carvana and all the things that are highly sus about Carvana. And I got this comment on Spotify, which, by the way, check out the links down below, guys. I am on Spotify. All my videos go up there as well. So if you want to watch it in the vehicle while you're driving or listen to it, you can. Shout out to Genevieve, who gave us this anecdote on Spotify yesterday. She said, this video was great. I will say anecdotally that my friend had sold a car to Carvana, and I believe it was at least a couple thousand above suggested Kelly Blue Book. He got a great sale, even though there was definitely concerns of maintenance, so I heavily believe the warranty is needed with Carvana cars or to be checked by trusted mechanic beforehand. But the problem is their setup is made for it to be delivered and signed. The fact that there are warranties aren't being respected says all I need to hear about this company. Thank you. Thank you, Genevieve, for that story, paying thousands above Blue Book for cars. And yet Carvana reports a bigger profit margin per vehicle, like triple what the competition reports. So my reply was another anecdote that makes Carvana's gross profit per unit number highly suspicious. If they're paying way over book for the car and it's a piece of shit, then how TF are they making triple the profit their competition is making on each car? The secret ingredient is crime. Thank you, Genevieve, for that story. I've heard similar stories before, and I'm hearing a lot of them now. They're paying too much for cars, but somehow they're making more money. Lox pointed out their profit margin per vehicle was way higher than everybody else. By the way, my friend Just Dario on Twitter had an excellent write-up about Carvana yesterday. He seems to think these inflated margins are coming from elsewhere involving finance. I think they're both right. I think they both found two different pieces of the same crooked puzzle. But check out that video. Lox, excellent work as always. And thanks again, Genevieve. And we're getting a little long in the tooth, guys. So we got to talk about this one. I'll just read the title here. Private Credit's Rising Pile of Bad Pick Points to Default Woes. There's a cartoon in this Bloomberg article that's really good, and I want to share it with you guys. All right, here's my guy. He says he's at the lender's office. All right, we're doing the Batman thing here. All right, you owe us $2 million in interest on your loan, but I don't have the cash. And then, of course, the private equity guy says, no problem. We'll just add that $2 million to your final bill in the form of new debt. Oh, that's great. We'll call it payment in kind. So they don't have the money, but you'll just make the principal bigger. It doesn't really matter if they pay with cash or with additional debt. We can still count this as income on our books. And these are the people that are selling this stuff to your 401k and your IRA, guys. We're a little short on time. I'd read you more from the article, but payment in kind, PIC, secondary offerings, tertiary offerings, continuation vehicles, CB squared, continuation vehicles of continuation vehicles, all the way private credit is faking earnings while they sell this crap to your retirement plan. Don't let them get away with it. And last but not least, guys, we got to talk about this one. Unfortunately, 2020's bingo update. I wish I was kidding. There's no jokes to be made about this. Miami Herald reported that United States might launch strikes against Venezuela at any time. I would add Miami Herald. That's a fairly credible newspaper that is down in, you know, the Florida, Miami area. So they're probably a little more in tune with the rumor mill in the Caribbean being from that region. There has been a lot of buildup. We've got a lot of naval and air assets in that region. We've talked about this with Doomberg. He thought war was inevitable. Now the Miami Herald is reporting it. It's not too late to switch it off, guys. It's not too late. I don't know what the hell we're doing. I'm pretty sure it's about oil, not drugs, even though, yeah, drugs are still killing hundreds of thousands of people, but that's been happening for years. What has changed? They found oil in Guyana. That changed. So sobering dose of reality at the end there. It's not too late to switch it off, guys. Bombs appear to be flying once again. But, hey, I want to say thank you very much to SWFL Bach, who's been a member for 4 months. I think SFW Bach meant to say something. I don't know. Or just, hey, being swell. Either way, thank you for being a member. Mish, do me a favor. Shoot me a text if there was a question attached there elsewhere in the chat that maybe got lost in translation there. Otherwise, thank you for the support for the channel. Metal Seer sends a super sticker. Okay, Metal Seer, what was the super sticker? I can't see it because it's too far back in the chat. Son of a gun. Hey, StreamYard, when people send super stickers, they should show up when I bring the comment up on the screen. Thank you, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. Hey, my buddy Travis from Real Estate Mindset is here. Says, how about another fishing trip? Me and Travis, we caught some sharks when we went fishing. Biggest bull shark I ever caught, which was probably the smallest bull shark Travis ever caught. But for me, that was a very big fish. My man knows how to fish for sharks. What can I say? Travis, thank you so much for supporting the channel. I would love to do another fishing trip. Need to find an excuse to get out to Houston, brother. Thank you so much for supporting the channel, Travis. Love your channel, you bonkers. S-O-B-U. Steve Wojtas says, I see natural gas futures up over $4. What's going on? Natural gas futures spiking may have something to do with the risk of conflict in Venezuela. A big player in the LNG market is Trinidad and Tobago, and they are in that same region, and Venezuela is making all kinds of threats at Trinidad and Tobago if they allow the United States Navy to use their ports for exercises or a base to launch strikes on Venezuela from. That could confound things. A lot of U.S. LNG flows through the Caribbean, maybe within range of certain missile strikes. So I suspect this has to do with the imminent risk of war with the Venezuelans. Don't quote me on that one, because I didn't actually notice that move in natural gas futures until you said something, Steve. But very real possibility that's Venezuela driving that one. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Ali Davidson says he became a YouTube member. Thank you so much, Ali. Welcome to the Melon Heads. Welcome to the Melon Patch. I appreciate the support for the channel. Thank you so much. And while we are saying thank you to Ali, I would also say thank you to A Fantastic. Does that mean you're not fantastic? You're A Fantastic? Or are you just an A Fantastic Melon Head? Either way, you are fantastic, sir. Welcome to the Melon Heads. Hey, guys, when you are a member, by the way, you get a free super chat every month. So use that and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. Mish says we're good. Thank you, Mish. I appreciate that. Dan Hedin says Amazon making AI money by cutting their workforce. Amazon did. They just announced the biggest layoffs, I think, in company history. Was it 30,000 layoffs Amazon announced earlier this week? And now they're like, oh, look at all my fake money. Look at all the fake AI data center credits I'm collecting and declaring it as revenue. Look at all the earnings per share that was manufactured just by changing a line of text on a spreadsheet about the valuation of Anthropic. Look at our net income and all the increases in earnings that we're not making from the rest of our business, which is only growing at a rounding error. And then look at our free cash flow, the money in the bank, which is actually rapidly approaching zero. Oh, don't look at that. Then you might not want to buy our stock. In the meantime, just keep bidding it up. Funny how that works, doesn't it, Dan? Thank you very much, Dan, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate that very much. Melonhead for 20 months. Uncle Fedster says, happy Friday, Jack. Great interview with the Green Chicken. Thank you very much, Uncle Fedster. And while we're at it, shout out to Doomberg as well. And, you know, I saw all these headlines. This was last week. I reached out to Doomberg because, I saw everything going on in South America. And then when I saw that the Ford Carrier Group was moving into the region, I was like, all right, it's time to talk to Doomberg. He follows energy. He follows geopolitics. Doomberg did not disappoint in that interview. And it looks like he was spot on. I hope Doomberg is proven wrong. I hope he's proven wrong, but I'm fearful that he will be right about this one. And the Miami Herald seems to be agreeing with him this morning. And guys, stock started to take a dive right around the time that Miami Herald headline came out that strikes on Venezuela were imminent. So who had war with Venezuela popping the AI bubble on 2020's bingo? That could be a thing. Thank you, Uncle Fester, for supporting the channel, sir. Gomers44 says, Jack, thank you for your work. You are very welcome, sir. He says, could you interview Mitch Vexler? You know, I think it's time to get Mitch and Travis on the channel to talk about this, get an update on his legal battle to end the pro... What is that? I don't... What, proper RT actors? The proper tractors? The property tax thing. Property taxers. There you go. Okay, that's what he said. Yes, I do think it's time we had Mitch and Travis on. Matter of fact, I think Travis is watching. Travis, let's do this. Let's get Mitch on the horn, and let's talk about your fight with property taxes. I just love what they're doing down there in Texas and elsewhere, because I think they're robbing people. They're pushing people out of their homes in order to enable reckless government spending, waste, grift, and embezzlement. And I think they're doing a real public service. And I do think it's long overdue that we have them on the channel. Good suggestion, Gomers. Thank you for the generosity supporting the channel. Looking forward to that one. BTB, what's going on? Says, thanks for all the info, Jack. You are most welcome, BTB. Thank you for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate that very much. The Nacho Man, Randy Savage, is back again. Thank you, sir. He says, watch the video. She's some smart lady. Yes, she is. Lox is incredibly sharp. Incredibly sharp. She does great work over there. I also got to meet Rob MacArthur yesterday. It wasn't on the air, but I had a good chance to talk to her husband, Rob, who also works at Unicus with her. He is incredibly sharp also. Really two fantastic people. We're lucky to have him on the channel. I'm so glad Lox comes on and talks to us. And she has been right on the money with this auto ABS private credit fiasco. One after another, she has been vindicated since the middle of September. Fantastic works, Lox. Nice to meet you, Rob. Thank you, Nacho Man. Hey, Ross Pavlik, welcome to the Melonhead, sir. Appreciate the support of the channel. Thank you very much. Remember, guys, feel free to use that super chat. Hey, who else we got here? Harmonair LLC, what's going on? He says a lot of shout-outs today. Shout-out to Jack. Shout-out to me. Yes, Wall Street Journal. That's how that works. Amazing, yeah. Well, you know, I got to apologize to John Galt, who posted that SOFR IORB chart, and then I clicked on something and couldn't get it back. It costs nothing to provide attribution. I don't know why more people don't do it, but it's really insulting when somebody writes exclusive on their article that is a story that somebody else had 6 freaking days ago. Yeah, exclusive. Way to exclusively bullshit your audience with that one. Thank you very much, Harmonair LLC. Appreciate that very much, sir. Tom Dillon says, what do you mean these AI grifters aren't making money? Did I stutter? They ain't making money. They're piling up millions of Jensen bucks. Tell me you saw my data center credits video without actually telling me. That's nothing to sneeze at. It's nothing they can take to the bank either. Those are IOUs. IOU computes. They're as good as money. For example, let's see here. $12 billion for a Microsoft stake in OpenAI. Might want to hold on to that one. Yep, that's a big one there. Channeling a little bit of Dumb and Dumber. What happens when people realize that the entire multi-trillion dollar stock bubble has really been inflated by a scene straight out of Dumb and Dumber? Huh. Yeah. Breakthrough in human ingenuity and artificial intelligence. Gotta love it. This is going to go down in history. It's just so unbelievably stupid. And there are so many imbeciles out there who think they're smarter than everybody. They're all piling into the same crowded AF trade, thinking they're beating the market. They're just feeding their money into an incinerator. By the time they realize it, it'll be too late. When one starts selling, they're all going to start selling, and they won't be able to get out in time. And then down goes Frazier. Where is it? Here we go. Yes, and Howard Cosell will go wild. Thank you, Tom Dillon, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate that very much. Hey, thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button, that subscribe button on the way out for the YouTube algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Really appreciate all the generosity in the super chats this morning, guys. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. Same goes to you, my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube and Patreon. You guys are awesome. Looking forward to talking at 2 p.m. Eastern time today, our weekly get-together on Zoom. Links down there and all that good stuff. Also, if you feel so inclined, hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody else. Stop the music. I'm almost there. Stop the music. I was right there. What the heck? How did I miss one? Worst sign-off ever. Ross Pavlik, I'm sorry. I almost missed you. Or did you sneak that one in? You did. You snuck it in right at the sign-off. I knew you're very clever, Ross. Ross Pavlik says, sold that 21,000 KBV Subaru to Carvana for $27,400, and just sold my 100,000-mile Sequoia, whose engine had to be replaced, for $30,500. So this is Carvana paying way over book value for cars. Another anecdote. Ross, thank you for piling that in. I'm sorry I almost missed this one. Look at this. How is Carvana reporting so much profit on every car they sell if they're paying $6,400 over book for a used Subaru, and then somehow they're making three times as much profit when they sell it as everybody else? Secret ingredient is crime. Ross, thank you for sneaking that one in. You're very clever. I know your tricks, Ross. All right, guys, I already did all the send-off stuff. So I'm just going to leave you with this. Until next time, live small and dream big.